You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Locked On Ravens. I am your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire, and today it's another Wednesday, so that means another crossover. We are here with the Locked On Bengals own Joe Goodberry. Joe, how are you today?
I'm doing fantastic, all things considered, after an 0-5 start.
Yes, I have to apologize to you for what's been going on down in Cincinnati. It hasn't been all sunshine and rainbows here, but with the Bengals being winless, hopefully that trend continues with me being a Ravens fan. But everybody, be sure to follow Joe at Joe Goodberry on Twitter. Amazing content on his Twitter. He writes for The Athletic and also hosts Locked On Bengals Daily, obviously. But Joe, I want to get right into the Bengals offense, starting with Andy Dalton. Andy Dalton has had a pretty successful career with the Bengals when it comes to playing the Ravens. And the Ravens have been a team that sometimes struggles when they play Cincinnati. How has Dalton looked this year to you? And has it been because of his offensive line that maybe things haven't shaken out the way he wants it to this year?
Yeah, I'm going to start with the O-line because it is so poor. It's the worst offensive line he's had in his career, and it's been steadily declining since 2016. So 17, 18, and now 19. It's just been hit with injuries, missed picks, not getting the production from the first-round picks they put out there, which the last 2 years, Billy Price and Jonah Williams aren't starting for them right now. Jonah's hurt, but Billy Price is backing up both center and guard. So it's had an effect on Andy Dalton, and he's not playing well, to be honest. He had a decent game last week, and really it was against the Cardinals the fourth quarter because they had to settle for field goals three times. They had 9 points going into the fourth quarter, and all of a sudden he and Tyler Boyd got on the same page, and next thing you know, they've got two touchdowns in about 2.5 minutes, and the game's tied up again. But largely he's been rattled, and he's not comfortable in the pocket at all, and you can't blame him for that. But at the same time, this is the situation, and it's kind of hard because when you have a guy who doesn't do well with pressure and you have a poor offensive line, well, everyone will say that's a bad mix. So how can you be so hard on the quarterback? Well, because I think we've known this offensive line has been bad for a while, so you kind of need a guy that can overcome it or create some plays, and he's just never been that kind of guy.
Right. He's not the most mobile in the NFL, nothing like Lamar Jackson. But let's get into Joe Mixon a bit, the Bengals running back who had pretty high expectations this year, I would say, on the young regular season. He has 66 carries for 242 yards, no rushing touchdowns yet, averaging about 3.7 yards per carry. Has Mixon been as advertised this season?
No, I wouldn't say that. He had one carry in the preseason. I think it slowed him down. He came out of the gates rusty. The offensive line being as poor as it was and still figuring out their combination, their best five starters, and even then they've had some injuries. It's hurt the team a little bit, and it wasn't until the Buffalo game where you could start to see them get it together just a little bit, and then the Steelers game, if that didn't get out of hand, I think he would have had a big day. And then he comes out versus the Cardinals, and the Cardinals are saying at this point, well, you guys haven't been able to run the ball, so we're going to take away the pass. You go ahead and run it, Bengals, and we'll see if you can beat us with that. And then straight down the field, 9 carries for about 60 yards, and the Bengals get a field goal out of it. But he looked great, and the offensive line was blocking great. And then the Cardinals clamped down, and it was a grind for the next 30 yards that ended the game. But overall, it was his best performance, and it's been a steady increase of them getting on the same page and getting his timing down, getting his reads a little bit crisper and cleaner. Really, it's going to come down to, though, he's still not helping this team in the passing game, and that's a big thing for me because he was such a good receiver at Oklahoma. He sometimes looks disinterested in pass protection, and they can't find creative ways to get the ball in his hands without that that needed necessity of, well, you got to pick up the blitz. Also, we can't just send you on a pass route all the time. So I think there's a little bit of a combination of blame there. But overall, he should be much better for a guy that I think was on the verge of being maybe their best player on offense.
And let's get into the receivers now, because AJ Green has yet to play a game this season, and he is out for this matchup with the Ravens. John Ross was coming into his own before going down with an injury, and he is now on IR. So it's really been on guys like Tyler Boyd and even guys like Tyler Eifert, Joe Mixon to step up. Who should Ravens fans be looking at to be the Bengals' main receiving threat this Sunday?
Yeah, without A.J. Green, who's really been a Ravens killer plenty of times in his career, he's not out there. He'll be out at least one more week. And then John Ross, who seemed to be coming into his own this year, and now he's on IR for another 7 weeks at least. It's Tyler Boyd only. The other two guys on the outside are Damian Willis, who's an undrafted rookie, and Auden Tate was last year's seventh-round pick, who is 6'5 and 230, so he can muscle some guys, and you can have fun with that because he's got really big, strong hands and can be a red zone threat. But he's not going to scare you deep. And really, it's going to come down, get down to Boyd in the slot, and they keep him in the slot about 80% of the time they can. There's even times where they're out there two wide receivers. He's not on the field because they see him as a slot guy primarily. They did let him get outside a little bit last week without having Green or Ross, and he wasn't as successful. Actually, I'm right about that now for The Athletic. But when they got him back in the slot and used him to attack safeties and attack linebackers, he was fantastic, and he's been a really good player for them. And he and Dalton just have a good connection, and they seem to be able to connect on third downs often.
The Ravens' offensive line this year has been a steady presence, but last week they seemed to struggle against the Steelers. Big boys such as Stephon Tuitt, Cameron Hayward, etc. With Geno Atkins being a guy who has plagued the Ravens for years, do you expect the Bengals' D-line to get a strong push against the Ravens' O-line?
The D-line's supposed to be the strength of this entire team for the Bengals, but they haven't been. For whatever reason, they seem to be unsure of what they're doing or not playing full speed. And again, they're out there too long because the offense can't get a long drive together. They can't muster a couple first downs on a drive. So the defense has been aired out on a few games. But really, they've been attacked horizontally. They've been attacked with speed. They've been attacked with misdirection, option stuff from the quarterbacks. It's just chewed them up and kept them at bay. I'd say everyone right now is having a down year, from Geno Atkins, Carlos Dunlap, Carl Lawson, and Sam Hubbard, to the point of what was a strength on this team is just out there, and maybe you notice them one, two, three, a handful of plays in an entire game. It's just inexcusable for how much talent they should have on that front, and it's starting to affect the rest of the defense.
Definitely. And then finally, my last question for you is me asking you, who is a Bengals fan, your perspective on what you've seen out of the Ravens this year, specifically with Lamar Jackson, because us Ravens fans, we know what Lamar is capable of, but the outside perspective is a bit different from what we see. So, Joe, what have you seen out of Lamar Jackson this year?
I was a big fan of Lamar coming out. I actually wanted the Bengals to take him. I hope they would have taken him, and they didn't have the guts to do it. They went with Billy Price after their guy, Frank Ragnow, went one pick ahead of them. And, well, we see where Price is right now. So I've always been a fan of Lamar, and now he's on a division rival, so it's hard to really root for him. But when you watch him, and for all the naysayers that were out there, it kind of makes you want to still root for him. And honestly, he looks like the exact guy I thought he would be at this point. And that's a guy that is cool and comfortable in the pocket, can make things happen, can run, obviously. We know that. He's an elite athlete. But his arm is stronger than people expected. He gets a quick release. Throwing from different angles is what I like a lot. And you see, even on a bunch of scrambles and runs against the Chiefs, he really showed this a couple times. But he'll step up in the pocket, look like he's going to run, quickly snap to set his feet and shoulders and look like he's going to throw, and then take off running again. That's something not every quarterback can do. I complain about this with Dalton, where once he becomes a runner, he's a runner. That's it. He's not going to be able to quickly adjust, get his eyes and head up and dump it off. Not often, not as much as you'd like. And with Jackson, it's very natural, very easy. He creates space because he's such an athlete that even if he's getting pressure, he has more time than the average guy. I'm a big fan of Lamar Jackson. I think as soon as they inserted him into their lineup last year, the Ravens took a big step forward, obviously making the playoffs. But now they've got a great chance to win this division again, 2 years in a row with him making the playoffs. I think if they can get a couple more pieces around him, and so far it looks like they're building around him really well. But this really, to me, I think they've got a great plan there, and they're on the right path.
And if Lamar can get a few more weapons and the Ravens can get a few more pieces, the Ravens are said to be one of the six teams, according to Jason Lockenfor, who are going to be active at the trade deadline. So maybe a new weapon will be incoming for Lamar. But Joe, thank you for your answers. We're going to go to break, and when we come back, Joe is going to be asking me some questions about the Ravens from a Bengals fan perspective. So stay tuned for that, and we will be right back.
But before we do that, would it be a podcast if I didn't talk about the bedroom? Let's talk about it once again. Blue Chew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know that they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever the opportunity arises. Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package, so no in-person doctor's visit, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, they've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our special promo code LOCKEDON. Just pay $5 in shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code LOCKEDON to try it for free. BlueChew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring this podcast. Welcome back to Locked On Ravens on this crossover Wednesday. I just asked Joe some questions about the Bengals, what to expect, and how they've been doing this year, but now it's Joe's turn. So, Joe, what do you got for me?
Kevin, I'd like to talk to you about your Ravens, and really, you asked me in the last segment about what I think about Lamar Jackson, but what do Ravens fans, where are they at? Is there any divide? Is there any split? Are there some fans that still don't think he can be it or can be the guy? And how would you assess him so far at this point in his career?
Well, I'm sure there are some Ravens fans out there who don't think Lamar is the answer, but the overall consensus among all Ravens fans is that he is. And the thing with Lamar is that he's still so young. He's only 22 years old at the moment. He was born in 1997. And the fact with Lamar is that he's still learning on the job pretty much. He still has less than 15 career starts in the NFL. He had to go into an offense last year that was very tailored around Joe Flacco and still put up very good numbers in that offense. The passing numbers weren't there. But as we're seeing this year, Lamar has kind of transitioned into more of a pocket passer. And that's something that the Ravens fans hope that he would become. And Lamar Jackson has 5 interceptions this season. But in my eyes, he's only thrown one. In the game against Pittsburgh, he had one very bad read towards the end of the half where the zone defender jumped on a route. But 2 of his interceptions were because of uncalled pass interference, or what looked to be uncalled pass interference. Another one was tipped, and another one should have been incomplete. The ball hit the ground. So Lamar Jackson, in my eyes, only has one interception compared to the 11 touchdowns he has in 5 games this year. And what Lamar has improved on and what he focused on in the offseason was improving his awareness, improving his footwork, and improving his accuracy, because we all know Lamar Jackson has arm strength. We saw it at Louisville, and everybody knows his immense talent with his legs. But in order to become a complete quarterback in the league, Jackson had to take that next step from year 1 to year 2. And so far, with everything being considered, with how young he is and how he's still learning and having that new offense tailored around him, I think he has done an exceptional job leading this Ravens offense.
Focusing on the running game for the Ravens, a big thing for me, I think, went under the radar was that they signed Mark Ingram. And now everyone realizes it now, especially if you got him in fantasy. He's been doing pretty well. But as coming from a team that really doesn't bring in free agents, the Ravens signed Mark Ingram. How has he fit in? How has he helped Lamar Jackson? Does this running game, is it as potent as it was last year?
It is. Mark Ingram on the season in his 5 games has 74 rushes for 372 yards and 6 touchdowns. That's 5 yards per carry. And while Ingram struggled a bit against the Steelers in that game on Sunday, he only had 19 carries for a paltry 44 yards, but he did have a touchdown. What the Ravens are using Ingram for is really being that workhorse running back that really isn't a workhorse. And what I mean by that is the Ravens have Gus Edwards, who came onto the scene last year as an undrafted free agent out of Rutgers. And he had over 100 carries in Lamar Jackson's starts that he started in, and really only lost yards on a carry. I think the stat was twice on over 100 carries, which is insane in itself. But what the Ravens have done with Mark Ingram this year is they've split him out wide. They've put him in the slot on a few occasions as well. He's really a do-it-all running back. He can pass protect. He's one of the best pass protectors in the NFL. But the thing with Ingram is that when he needs a break and he needs to be rested for a few plays, they have Gus Edwards and they have Justice Hill, who was a 4th-round pick out of Oklahoma State in the draft. And what they do with those running backs is they rotate them in a way where Ingram won't get dead tired every single game to the point where he can't contribute well in the 4th quarter. And that's really been the Ravens' mantra with their cornerbacks. And they've done it a bit with their running backs as well. But what Ingram brings to this team is another bulldozing running back who bounces off defenders, can make it to the outside when he needs to, and just doesn't go down easy. He makes sure he fights for every inch of yardage that he gets. And he's been a really fun presence on the team. The players seem to love him. And the Ravens' culture around Mark Ingram is very, very good. The Ravens have been a very strong culture team over their entire history, which isn't very long right now. But what Ingram brings is a fun-loving guy who works hard, can put his nose down and contribute. And that's all the Ravens could have asked for.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. The Ravens are relying on 2 rookies, really, out of all the draft picks. But at wide receiver, with Marquise Hollywood-Brown and Miles Boykin, how have they played so far? What's the status of Hollywood? I kind of refer to him as the Ravens version of John Ross, as they're kind of similarly built, similar skill set, speed, and injuries have been an issue.
Yeah, well, with Hollywood, it's been a thing where his first game of the season against Miami, he went off. He had 4 receptions for 147 yards and 2 touchdowns. And everybody thought, okay, the Ravens might have drafted a wide receiver in the first round. For once, that's good. And of course, it's unfair to put those assessments on a guy after one game in the league. But then he came back the next week, had 8 receptions for 86 yards, including a beautiful 41-yard pass from Lamar Jackson that sealed the game. What you're looking at with Hollywood is a guy who is pretty small by NFL standards. He's only 5'9 and weighs 170 pounds. But he didn't run the 40-yard dash, but people clocked him in at around a 4'3", 4'25 area, and he had a broken foot that he suffered in the Big Ten championship game. And so he kind of fell down people's draft boards, and the injury that he aggravated against the Steelers was an ankle injury. I don't think it had anything to do with that foot. But what teams have begun to do is hone in on Hollywood and hone in on Mark Andrews, Lamar's other favorite target. The two guys out of Oklahoma have combined for most of Lamar's attention. And you mentioned Miles Boykin, who's a guy who really needs to benefit from that. Boykin didn't play a lot of snaps against the Steelers. There wasn't any injury that was reported. I just don't think he played a lot. And overall, on the young season, Boykin has had 2 touchdowns on the year. He caught one in Miami and then also against Cleveland. But his highest yardage receiving game is only 32 yards. And with teams honing in on these two targets, Lamar Jackson has to find more people to throw the ball to. And Miles Boykin should be a prime candidate for more looks because of his big body frame. While we mentioned Hollywood was only 5'9", Miles Boykin is 6'4", 220 with speed. And while he's not as polished as a route runner, needs a little more refinement, his drops were a concern. But he's a guy who, if you put him in and you get him some reps, he could be a guy who comes in and is a great number 2 complement receiver to Hollywood Brown right now. The Ravens don't have a lot of other options. Willie Snead, Chris Moore, Seth Roberts, those other receivers. And you look at the two rookies, and they're hoping that the chemistry that they develop with Lamar Jackson over this season will continue for years to come.
Yeah, that makes sense. I bring up that they added Mark Ingram in free agency, but they lost Terrell Suggs and the linebacker C.J. Mosley. How have they replaced those two? And is the pass rush something the Bengals have to worry about? I always felt like the Ravens found a way to get a pass rush, even if it was just Suggs and an okay guy, whether it was Matt Judon or Pernell McPhee. But they were always able to get pressure on the Bengals. How's their pass rush look this year?
Well, you mentioned Terrell Suggs and C.J. Mosley as two big losses, and they have been immense. The Ravens actually lost 4 defensive starters off of their team from last year, with Eric Weddle and Za'Darius Smith also joining the two you mentioned. And they've had a little bit of trouble replacing and replicating that talent that they had, partially because they're relying on their young guys, which is something that the Ravens like to do. They like to grow home talent. You mentioned they don't bring in a ton of free agents, a ton of splashy big name signings, because they do so well drafting in the middle rounds, the later rounds. The first round, they haven't hit on a ton of prospects. I mean, obviously, you get your Ray Lewis, your Terrell Suggs, your Jonathan Ogden. But over the last few years, the second round has been a round where the Ravens have not hit on players. And you're starting to see those misses creep up on the Ravens. Tyus Bowser, who the Ravens selected in the second round out of Houston a few years ago, ahead of Juju Smith-Schuster, who was a player they're rumored to be very interested in, has not performed very well. He hasn't learned to set the edge. And he has a ton of potential. And I'm a big Tyus Bowser fan. But him replacing Terrell Suggs and Za'Darius Smith has not gone the way the Ravens have wanted to. They also selected Tim Williams in the next round of that draft out of Alabama, a very competent speed rusher, but he did not put it together at all, only had 2 tackles this year, and was promptly released last week for lack of production. And new general manager Eric DaCosta has established a culture that if you're not producing and you're not helping the team, you have got to go. The Ravens traded Jermaine Illuminor to the Patriots in the preseason because he was pretty much handed the starting left guard position and then didn't do anything with it, so he was shipped out of town. What the Ravens have learned with their defense is that it will take time to rebuild because they lost so many starters on it. The Ravens' pass rush has not been up to standards this year. You mentioned you always feel like the Ravens' pass rush is that dominant force, even if there is an okay guy. But Matthew Judon, who you mentioned, has actually become that alpha guy. He has 3 sacks on the season, and the Ravens only have 9 as a team, which does not rank very high. And it seems like every play they send 5, 6, 7 guys, they're not generating any pressure. The pocket is clean. You saw with Mason Rudolph and Devlin Hodges with the Steelers. Even if it's a third-string quarterback, if you ask the secondary to cover for 5, 6, 7 seconds, it's not going to happen because receivers will eventually get open. That happens with every team. With a veteran quarterback like Andy Dalton on the opposite side of the field this week, Andy knows that if his offensive line can hold up in a way to give him time in the pocket, his receivers will get open eventually. So in terms of the Ravens' pass rush and how they plan to replicate what they had last year, it's been tough. Pernell McPhee has come in, a guy who was on the 2012 Super Bowl championship winning team. He came back and he has been a steadying force, but he's a veteran. He can't play that many snaps. The Ravens need people to step up, and if the Ravens get into a situation on Sunday with the Bengals where they're not generating pressure, it could be trouble for the Ravens on Sunday.
Yeah, I guess my last question is, Kevin, or maybe it's a question for both of us, what's the prediction for this game on your end?
You know, even with all of the defensive concerns that the Ravens have when it comes to the pass rush, I believe that the Ravens defense looked a lot better against Pittsburgh. And I actually predicted a defensive shutout, which was not really the case. But overall, the Ravens looked better. Their middle linebackers looked sturdier with the additions of Josh Bynes and LJ Fort. And the secondary looked great as well. Marlon Humphrey played amazing. Maurice Kennedy played well. Earl Thomas looked the part. They did lose Tony Jefferson to a season-ending ACL injury. So young guys will be stepping in there, you know, continuing with that trend of young guys. But I think this will be a Ravens victory because of the fact that the Bengals offensive line is so beat up and the fact that Andy Dalton does not have weapons around him. I believe that if this defense can hold up and if the defense can hold the Bengals to, let's say, even like 20 points, if the Bengals can put up 20 points, I still believe the Ravens can come and be in their home stadium with that crowd backing them and give the fans a performance that they've been looking for, because 2 weeks ago against Cleveland, it was not a pretty sight. And I think the Ravens are looking to redeem their home fans. So if I had to give a final score prediction here, I would say Ravens 27, Bengals 10. What about you, Joe?
I was going to say 27-17, and maybe I gave them an extra touchdown there on credit. But I don't think people from the outside know that we are talking about them stealth tanking recently. Mm-hmm. Just some of the decisions they've made, some of the things they've done, some of the players they refuse to play, and just the way they're going about business has been weird. And yeah, they're not a great team, but I don't think they should be 0-5. And you know, some of the guys they've decided, okay, well, take a couple more weeks to get back from your injury, you know, let's take it easy this year in a few areas. It's been kind of, in hindsight, when we look back at it as a fan base, we go, well, maybe they are tanking. Maybe they do want a top five pick. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Bengals go out and lay an egg in this game. Not on purpose. I think the players want to play. Of course they do. They want to win. And it's a division game. I just don't think they're in position to be good enough to win many games this year. So I'm going to go with 27-17.
Well, the Bengals are looking ahead to the draft, Joe, and if you are as well, who do you want the Bengals to take in this year's draft? I know it's early, but if you had to take a guy right now, who would it be?
And currently, right now, as we sit, they have the number one pick. And if that's the case, then I'm going to completely and saying, let's go quarterback and let's try and flip this thing around and hope for the best. But if they end up 2, 3, 4, because they play the Dolphins week 16, so that's going to be the toilet bowl for the Tua bowl, if you will. And if they win that, and if they end up a little bit further down, if A.J. Green comes back, they don't trade him, and they win a couple of games on accident, well, then that depends. Are we looking at a tackle from Georgia? Can you get Chase Young from Ohio State? So both those guys would help if you can't get a Justin Herbert also.
This draft is very top-heavy, and whoever the Bengals get hopefully won't get injured this time around.
Yeah, please.
We are going to go to break, and when we come back, it's going to be just me, and we're going to be talking about the trade deadline, get into a mini trade deadline preview for the Ravens, so stay tuned, and we will be right back. Welcome back, everybody, to Locked On Ravens. Thanks again to Joe for coming on the show, giving us that Bengals fan perspective, but now it's just going to be me, and I want to get into the NFL trade deadline, because the deadline is coming up on October 29th, and that day is fast approaching. It doesn't seem very close at the moment to some people, but it is coming. And the Ravens have been rumored to be interested in multiple players, including Jalen Ramsey is the big fish, who's actually going to be the big fish of the trade deadline, it seems like. But Jacksonville doesn't seem like they want to trade him anymore after that standoff that they've had where Jalen Ramsey hasn't played over the past few weeks. And they're kind of at a standstill there. They're saying Ramsey is injured, but to the extent that he's actually injured, who knows? But the question becomes, do the Ravens need to make a move? There are most likely going to be some star players available at the deadline, like Ramsey. There's Von Miller, who's rumored to be available. Chris Harris, Derek Wolfe, all Broncos. The Broncos may be going through a fire sale because they are 1-4 at the moment. Even players like Stephon Diggs, who is rumored to be unhappy in Minnesota, even though he has come out and publicly said that he is happy. It's a matter of, do the Ravens need to make a move? And if they do, do they want to mortgage away their future for it? Eric DaCosta, after the draft last year, came out and said that it hurt him not having a second-round pick and seeing all those talented guys go off the board in the second round. It hurt him not to have a second-round pick and was very frustrating, and he didn't want to go through that again. Obviously, the Ravens traded their second-round draft pick to the Philadelphia Eagles to trade up back in the first round last year to get Lamar Jackson at that 32nd pick. So the question becomes, should the Ravens mortgage their future for a star player who is 30 years old, who's 32 years old. There's players like Ramsey who are very rare to come by at the trade deadline because they're so young. Ramsey has, I think, around an $11 million player option for next year, but then he's going to be demanding a hefty salary. And the question becomes, do the Ravens have a need at cornerback right now with Marlon Humphrey? Brandon Carr has his team option for next year. Jimmy Smith will be a free agent, but the team has players like Maurice Kennedy and Anthony Averett ready to step up. So do they trust their young guys? Personally, I was all aboard the Jalen Ramsey boat. I wanted the Ravens to do whatever it took to get Ramsey because the secondary looked like it was struggling over the past few weeks, and it was. But what we've kind of learned, and as the season has gone on, we've learned that really is the Ravens' pass rush that's been kind of hindering this defense at the moment. The Ravens only have 9 sacks, as we talked about with Joe. And it's something where I personally don't believe the Ravens should trade their future for a star player at the moment, especially because of the salary that he's going to command, and with all the free agents that the Ravens have coming up, I think that that money can be well spent somewhere else. Even taking a look in free agency, you can spend that money on a younger guy in free agency. I mean, look at the inside linebackers. I would love to throw a boatload of money at Joe Schobert and have him anchor that inside with Patrick Owusu for years to come. That would be my best case scenario when it comes to linebackers, but obviously that's not a pass rusher. But with the whole Ravens linebacker crew, it's been kind of a plug and play who's going to step up and who's going to perform. Josh Bynes looked great last week, but is that a long-term solution? I don't believe it is. So when you look at a player like Schobert and you look at a player like Von Miller, Schobert is younger. Schobert is a guy who can anchor the defense. Von Miller, at this point in his career, is making a lot of money, and at this point in the season, he only has 2 sacks through 5 games, and they both came against Jacksonville on September 29th. Is Von Miller an exceptional world talent player? Absolutely. Would he be a great fit on the Ravens? Absolutely. But you have to take into account multiple factors, and when I do that, I like the fact that the Ravens have a first-round pick and a second-round pick this year and have 10 draft picks. Will the Ravens pick with all 10 picks? I don't think so. I think they're going to be maneuvering on draft day, and as I reported earlier, Jason Lockenvora said that the Ravens are going to be one of 6 teams active. But maybe when you look at a trade, you look at a player like a Derek Wolfe, who is entering the final year of his contract, will be a free agent, but he's not as flashy as Von Miller, but he's a pass-rushing defensive end, but he hasn't been living up to his potential, and he hasn't been living up to the standards that he has set for himself. So they could get him on the cheap and maybe give away a 5th and a 6th, a 4th and a 5th for a player like Derek Wolfe, who could immediately plug and play and help the team make the playoffs. But then they still have their first-round pick, their second-round pick, and if Wolf impresses, they can re-sign him, and he knows that defense now. So maybe I'm looking at a lesser piece, not a Jalen Ramsey, not a Von Miller, because the draft in the first round has a lot of talent at a lot of different positions. You look at the Ravens' needs, wide receiver, interior offensive lineman, pass rusher, inside linebacker, cornerback. There are a lot of positions that the Ravens could fill with a first- and a second-round pick. And I believe that with Eric DaCosta, he will turn his draft room around in terms of drafting in the first and second round. The Ravens have hit on a few first-round picks over the last few years, so with Lamar Jackson, Hollywood Brown looks to be a steal. And now it's only a matter of time before those second-round picks start to come in as well. And with Ozzie Newsome no longer at the head, I think that Eric DaCosta, with the way his first draft went, I mean, it really couldn't have gone any better. So I believe that the Ravens have been figuring it out slowly, and with young guys, you just expect things to come as the season goes on. A veteran presence would help this team tremendously. We saw that with the linebackers. Hopefully, Jihad Ward can come in and be a presence on the defensive line. But what I think should happen is the Ravens should hold on to their top draft picks. They should look at a guy like a Derek Wolfe, a lesser piece who could contribute in the long run, but who won't cost the Ravens a lot of draft capital. You hold on to your draft picks, you hold on to your capital, and you hold on to your cap space. Thus, you're not hindering the team in the future. It's a win-win for the Ravens. So while I was aboard the Jalen Ramsey train, and I was thinking, well, okay, it's a star, and stars help teams. And when you draft a player, you want them to turn into a Jalen Ramsey. But me personally now, I think that the Ravens would do themselves a huge favor by keeping their cap space and keeping their draft capital for the offseason. So that is my stance on that. Let me know what you guys think, but that's all I have for you today. When we get back tomorrow, we're going to be getting into a mini preview of the Bengals at Ravens game. So stay tuned for that, and I will see you tomorrow.